Good morning, everybody. In for Sean Pendergast. I'm Sean Bajani. Seth Payne here as well. Final hour before we hand things off to In the Loop. 713-572-4610. 572-4610 if you'd like to be a part of the show. Been talking Rockets a lot this morning. We'll get back to it here. But before we do, shout out John Singleton. Getting a little bit of love on the text line. We were having some fun last segment. Which Astros could be football players? And a few people said John Singleton. And I just simply texted back, yeah, practice squad. And that's where I'd leave it at that. You know, play multiple positions.
You know what, though? Last year, remember, he slimmed down, and he did look more athletic and spry at first base. He would have as a football player, where he'd
early. Early he did. I thought he looked better at first base earlier last season than he did late. Yeah. It was just kind of, it wore on him. For a guy that doesn't play multiple positions, it's rough.
Yeah, sustaining the body transformation is tough in season. As a baseball player especially. They get good food, man. Yeah, yeah. They got a nice per diem there. Yeah. So, Singleton, he's another guy that 100% you'd love to have seen. Okay, if he had trained as a football player. He would have. He would have had to be in a running back or a linebacker or something. He's not that tall.
Somebody said, talking about Yordan Alvarez, where I had him as my light-in-the-ass tackle. Somebody said, tight end, but like Gronk-like level injuries.
Yeah.
That's fair. I feel like that's fair at this point in time. The Rockets with a big day yesterday, man. On the heels of Kevin Durant joining Houston last week and all the excitement abound there. It was, we've gone through the gamut. Could it be Quentin Grimes? Well, he's asking for too much money. Could it be, you know, various 3-and-D options? They were coming off the board kind of hot and heavy yesterday afternoon and into the evening, Seth. And then you see that, hey, you know, boom, Dorian Finney-Smith, who was rumored to be meeting with the Rockets. I saw that report, I believe, yesterday during our show. Well, to hell with the meeting. He just went up ahead and said, yeah, sure, I'm coming on. And then Clint Capella brought in an oldie but a goodie. The Rockets are absolutely stacked right now when you consider a depth chart that has, what, 5'6" wings that span anywhere from 6'7" to 6'11", the versatility. The Rockets have taken the league by storm, it very much feels like, just in a week's time, Seth. They've put everybody on notice.
And I think you always want to guard against homerism with it. And, you know, you and I were kind of talking earlier about it, almost having to brainstorm for the things that you don't feel good about with the Astros right now, or with the Rockets right now.
Yeah.
Because they've checked off a lot of boxes, almost to the degree to where you start thinking like, all right, wait a second, am I being overly jubilant about this? So you check yourself against what the outsiders are saying and what people around the NBA, whether they're former players or talking heads or what have you. I mean, the league is genuinely admiring what Rafael Stone has done this offseason.
Mm-hmm.
Initially when you started talking about a trade for Kevin Durant, it seemed almost one that would, like, you'd have to sacrifice so much of your young core potentially to pull it off. That is it worth it? Is it win now? Is it championship or bust? I think they were aggressive in the offseason, but they managed to land Kevin Durant for very reasonable compensation. But they're also rounding it out in such a way that it doesn't feel like, oh, it's either they win a championship this year or next year and then it all is lost. They're built to sustain whatever success they might achieve as long as you continue to get development from some of the younger guys. It's really hard to find a flaw with the way they've approached this.
The sustainability factor in how they are building and have built in recent years, that's one of the most similar things or things that I would liken the Rockets to the Texans on, is they are built for sustainability. Look, when you believe you have found your franchise quarterback, when you believe that you have found cornerstones of a defense like the Texans have, you can build around them. And that's exactly what they've continued to do. Maybe not this offseason withstanding, but when I say this, really the prior two, in that I felt like the Texans had the very best offseasons out of anybody else in the NFL. I think the Rockets, just in a week's time, have had the very best offseason out of anybody else in the NBA. And look, it's very much Kevin Durant centered. It's Kevin Durant, man. And I don't care at this point in time to make this argument how old he is. It's about productivity. It's about what he brings to a team that didn't have that score, that go-to guy in crunch time. The Rockets, as disciplined, as hard-nosed, as tough as they are defensively, this is about as well-rounded, I think, as you could have possibly envisioned a Rockets team being on paper.
Yeah, and I think, you know, the comparison with football is tough sometimes because winning the offseason is almost a negative in football sometimes because you get too excited about the names on paper. And, you know, last year people were debating whether or not the Texans would have 3,000-yard receivers. That didn't work out all that
great. I know, I had that conversation.
Yeah.
I blame myself.
Well, you know what bothered me about that conversation, not to get off on too much of a tangent, was that it's not necessarily desirable to have 3,000-yard receivers. It's that you're probably not as well-rounded as you need to be. But as far as the Rockets go, what you get nervous about in the NBA is, okay, if you're going to lean into aging veteran superstar players, the real recipe for building yourself up in the offseason with excitement and then being let down is when you do it the way the Lakers have done it various times, where you just get, hyper-aggressive with big names on aging players, and it just doesn't work out. They're not the same guys anymore.
Yeah.
This doesn't feel like that because you brought in one guy who's an aging player but still playing at a lot of his historical levels on a per-minute and per-game basis. But he's the one guy that you're doing it with. You're not expecting him to jibe with two other guys who are transplants and coming in for a ring chase. That's where it feels better. And that, you know, he's at a stage in his career where I think he's been through integrating himself into new offenses before. He understands what the challenges will be. That part of it, I'm not nearly as nervous about as I might be, say, in football or with a different composition of basketball team.
You know, there will be other articles written about this type of thing, and people have this conversation, and I played some audio. Let's see, what's today? Tuesday. I played audio, I think, of it on Friday. It was Kevin Garnett and Paul Pierce doing a podcast, and they were talking about the impact that Kevin Durant is going to have on the Rockets. And it was Kevin Garnett, you know, basically saying that, you know, Durant's not going to the Rockets to, you know, be a vocal leader. Like, this guy just does it. And he was saying, like, kind of like Paul Pierce. And Paul Pierce was kind of like KG's soundtrack in this podcast. He was like, yeah. And where Paul Pierce wasn't a guy that was a rah-rah guy. He came in and he put the work in. He was getting extra shots, working extra with the trainer, lifting weights, doing this, that, the other. He was always doing something. And that's what Kevin Durant, you know, has always done and will do. And I already feel like, you know, just the idea that you're getting a future Hall of Famer to come in at this point in time for a team that felt like it was so close this past season. Jabari Smith has already got his nose to the grindstone and was talking the other day about how he's trying to become a better ball handler and wants to become more physical and wants to broaden his game and develop a higher motor and things like that. Guys are going to get better around Kevin Durant without him even having to say anything. And what got me thinking about that was initially an article that somebody wrote last week after the Rockets had acquired him from Phoenix, in that Durant ain't coming here for, you know, leadership or to be a teacher or to be a mentor. He's coming to the Rockets to win. And you have to fall in line. And I like that on the surface coming in.
Yeah, I don't I think the biggest like knee-jerk reaction that some people had was that they don't like Kevin Durant for whatever reason, and that it was really curious that a lot of people were convinced that Kevin Durant would somehow be bad for the culture. Unless you're basing that on him getting into it with Draymond Green, or just whatever else, that hasn't been the issue with him elsewhere. Like, was he the guy that could transform the Suns without an actual talented roster or what have you? No, but it wasn't like he was the problem with the Suns. So that part of it, and more than anything, the fact that Udoka basically is rubber stamping this and giving it the stamp of authenticity on him feeling like he'll be a good culture fit, that's enough for me. Like, my trust in Udoka at the point, at this point, when it comes to culture type stuff, is I'm not going to second guess him on that stuff.
See, I don't know that at the time. I know, in fact, I didn't know this at the time. I didn't realize, anyway, the relationship that existed between Udoka, the appreciation for one another, between Udoka and Durant during the season. I asked that question, like, boy, if the Rockets, never mind what they have to give up, but if the Rockets go out and do add Kevin Durant for whatever it was going to cost during the season to make a push, I don't know how well that's gonna flow, gonna jibe, because all I thought in my mind was Kevin Durant is, here's a guy that's gonna want the ball, that is going to come in and disrupt something. Never mind, like, it should have been at the very forefront. Disrupt what? Because the offense is offense,
right,
here,
right,
with the Rockets.
One of our listeners made the best point, which is he's going to disrupt what they're good at, which is second chance points. If Dorian Finney-Smith and everybody else are actually making shots, and Durant's making shots, that you don't have these second chance opportunities. Yeah. I'll say I'm willing to sacrifice that. You know what a meek celebration that is when you're like, oh, we're so good in second chance points, because you know that's something that evaporates in the playoffs. That, yeah, I would much prefer them that not to be their calling card.
Yeah, but it's a good thing to have, right? And, you know, that's you like Steven Adams, who gives you the ability to create second chance opportunities. Clint Capella, for that matter, as well. But then those two guys taking away second chance opportunities from a defensive perspective with their shot blocking ability and their ability to hang around and grab boards.
I saw the comparison that I like with the Dorian Finney-Smith signing is somebody brought up P.J. Tucker. You know, signing P.J. Tucker after they acquired Chris Paul as a compliment and a guy that can be 3-and-D for you.
Yeah.
And Finney-Smith's been a better shooter from three than Tucker in his career. But that's where in improving the offense while still retaining the defense, you're losing something defensively in Dylan Brooks. You replace him with Dorian Finney-Smith, who's not as versatile a defender as Dylan Brooks, but has length and is a really good rim protector, but that also is a better overall shooter.
Yeah.
And, like, so you don't lose a lot of the core of what you were good at as a team defensively, but you're adding more ability to space the floor and more actual, like, a better shooting option than Dylan Brooks, even though Dylan was great last year from three.
Yeah, he was. Dylan, I think, ended up finishing the season just under 40% from three. And then last year, Dorian Finney-Smith, it was a career year for him. He shot just better than 41% from three. If you take that year away, Dorian Finney-Smith is a career 35% three-point shooter. And it's 36%, just better than 36% if you include last season. Look, that's good, quality, efficiency from beyond the arc. That's what you needed. And I wasn't ever at all comfortable with kind of riding with Dylan Brooks. All right, there's something always sketch and uncomfortable about a guy coming off of a career season that's shooting the ball like that. And maybe I'm a little more sour on that because nothing else really made me feel great about the Rockets offensively. Now that you add Kevin Durant into the mix, and that a lot of attention is going to be on him, if you can create movement away from the basketball, he's going to find you. And the Rockets have options now. I don't know what role Reed Shepard's going to play, but I do know that when he was on the court last year, the guy could score, and he didn't, shy away from shooting his shot. So I think trying to say, you know what, yeah, this guy's going to be used this way, this way, this way, it's tough. Like we've said before this morning, I'm just excited about the potential and in more ways, in better ways than I had been the last couple of years, because that's all the Rockets have had is a lot of potential.
One way I'd like to try to think about the Rockets right now is in terms of becoming a bona fide, you see it on the court, and yeah, this team can win a championship. I feel like Durant immediately improves your offense, at least on paper, obviously. But what does this team look like? Can this team be a better team? If you take Kevin Durant, let's say Kevin Durant gets injured, unavailable. Can this team, as constructed without Kevin Durant, can you see a point where through development they're a better team than last year's playoff team with Jalen Green on the court. Like, so like, there's no Jalen Green, there's no Kevin Durant, but this is still a better team than last year.
I think so. And to me, it comes down with two guys. And you prefaced it by saying with the development, right?
Yeah.
Okay, with
yeah.
the development of who? Has to be with Amen Thompson, and it has to be with Alperen Şengün, and it has to be with Jabari Smith. It has to be. Well, with you stay status quo with those guys, I don't know that you're better. I don't know that you're better than another first-round exit, if we're being honest, because it doesn't solve you're back at square one, right? It doesn't solve the scoring issue. It doesn't solve the having a guy to go to in crunch time. You're back at square one, but you know, I think Alpi possesses a little bit of that. You know, give me the ball in crunch time, and I've got this for you. I think Jabari, you know, can be an excellent, you know, option, you know, to be a more efficient scorer of the basketball when he takes his damn shot. He got the minutes in the postseason, but he didn't take the shots.
Well, I'm just fascinated by what they end up doing with the two big man lineup, because now that you've got that out there, but also with Kevin Durant, who's 7 foot tall and able to provide some of the spacing that you lose when you've got two centers out there on the floor.
Yeah.
So
yeah.
That part of it, now that includes obviously Durant being on the floor. But yeah, that's the biggest, like, I just try to keep reminding myself that there is still developing and there's still work to be done. I'd be disappointed if the offense isn't better in January than it is in November. You know, like you don't want to look at this as, okay, this team is ready to go, just put them in shrink wrap and here we go. Like, they're going to have to work on things just in terms of meshing, but then also the younger players continuing to develop.
He's Seth Payne, Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast this morning. Coming up next, we'll go around the NFL a little bit, and we've also got some more good stuff from Texans running back Damian Pierce. That's next at Sports Radio 610. All right, in for Sean Pendergast, I'm Sean Bajani, Seth Payne here as well. Hit us up, 713-572-4610. You can text 572-4610. Seth, take a little trip around the NFL, and we'll start with the Pittsburgh Steelers. They had themselves a day yesterday. And, you know, I saw a tweet earlier this morning from the Dan Patrick Show. They were asking the question, like, boy, who had the better day yesterday, the Houston Rockets or the Pittsburgh Steelers? And so think about that as we go through this a little bit.
I think the difference would be, just in canvassing how Steelers fans are feeling about mm-hmm. this trade, where they pick up Jalen Ramsey and tight end Jonnu Smith.
Yeah.
Steelers fans, they seem very skeptical though to me, because they don't, first of all, they don't trust Arthur Smith, the offensive coordinator, to do anything with Jonnu Smith. He's as much as Arthur Smith loves Jonnu Smith from their time together in Tennessee, but Jonnu Smith is was a more productive player and in a lot of ways a more exciting player and was used more heavily with Miami. So they're skeptical of Arthur Smith. He loves to play with multiple tight ends, plays with three tight ends on the field more than any other team in the league, and yet averages like 2.4 yards per carry out of those plays, or 2.4 yards per play out of those plays. So people are skeptical about it. The Jalen Ramsey side of it is interesting because Jalen Ramsey is still playing very good football, but you wonder exactly what are they going to look like in the backfield. They ship out Minkah Fitzpatrick, a safety. There's a chance that Jalen Ramsey gets used some as a safety or at times just in playing with some of the more unconventional backfield personnel groupings.
Yeah.
That he doesn't necessarily have to be a slot corner to be out there. That they're going to figure out a way to use Jalen Ramsey, and their pass defense needs it. I think people are just more skeptical that this offense with Aaron Rodgers at the helm, Arthur Smith as their offensive coordinator, and whatever assortment of weaponry they have, that it doesn't feel like, oh yeah, here you go, you're off to the races now.
So some of the other nuts and bolts in the trade that we're talking about, where the Dolphins agreed to trade All-Pro corner Jalen Ramsey, tight end Jonnu Smith to the Steelers. In exchange for All-Pro Minkah Fitzpatrick, as part of that deal, which, of course, like everyone else, is pending physicals, the Dolphins sending a 2027 seventh-round pick to the Steelers and receive a 2027 fifth-round pick back from Pittsburgh. They made that deal. Is some of the trepidation about, okay, the usage of Jonnu Smith or Arthur Smith not exactly knowing how to employ this, like, Isn't that curious? Like, in a league, correct me if I'm wrong, but league-wide, generally speaking, teams are using more, two tight end sets where, like, if you're looking at this and you just brought in Aaron Rodgers, like, how has he functioned in his career, with that personnel on the field? And is that something that maybe makes you feel a little bit better? If you're
Aaron Rodgers has been a guy that's been notorious for just hating the run game. And that's the biggest mystery about this is, all right, how does Aaron Rodgers genuinely buy into this system that's a lot different from how they've operated in the past and really just latch into, okay, if we run this system, it makes it easier for me as a quarterback and we're going to rely heavily on the play action and all of that. That's really the big leap that Aaron Rodgers needs to take. And he played with a hand-selected, awful offensive coordinator in Nathaniel Hackett with the Jets. There were always stories that he and Mike McCarthy just didn't see eye to eye on things. And Aaron was checking into plays that McCarthy didn't even know were in the playbook. Like all of this, Aaron Rodgers is saying all the right things right now, but to just change his stripes that drastically, theoretically, it should work. Arthur Smith is the type of offensive coordinator you would like to have for an older quarterback where you can minimize exactly how much he needs to create. It's just a question of whether is Aaron Rodgers genuinely going to be that guy all of a sudden for the first time in his life.
Yeah, interesting. All right, keeping it with the Steelers, saw this report yesterday per Adam Schefter. The Steelers apparently about to get bombarded with trade proposals for TJ Watt. Here's the report from Schefter. In recent weeks, multiple teams have been discussing whether they can trade for Steelers standout TJ Watt, who skipped the team's most recent minicamp. Pittsburgh hasn't shown any willingness to deal Watt so far, but he's unhappy with his contractual situation, and sources believe outside team interest is likely to increase given today's trade. Do you think at all, before we kind of get into the nuts and bolts of this Watt drama that maybe is building or not, do you think that this is just a situation, maybe even a lack of communication where, hey, you know, the Steelers, they've got other things they need to take care of, like via this trade and maybe making salaries fit before they, you know, commit something to TJ Watt?
I don't know. I don't know. I don't know how much of it is TJ Watt being unhappy with his contract or just unhappy with just life in Pittsburgh and doesn't trust that the organization is gonna go where he wants it to go.
Yeah,
and I'm sure he wants to get a new payday out of it as well. I don't. The Steelers have operated so far outside the realm of how they typically operate that, and they feel this is the first time I can really think that the Steelers look like they're in desperation mode. That you're banking on a 40-year-old quarterback, that you trade for DK Metcalf, you trade now for Jalen Ramsey, and it's such a big departure from the way that they used to operate. The way they used to, would they just go ahead and say goodbye to TJ Watt or accept his trade request as they're also bringing Jalen Ramsey in? I think most likely they're going to end up paying him at some point. Like you had alluded to.
Yeah.
There's a lot of – they got to get their ducks in a row in a lot of respects. But if CJ – but then that's where we'll learn whether TJ is genuinely just wants a new contract or if maybe he feels he's on a sinking ship and he wants to go to a more competitive team.
Yeah, just my reaction to that Schefter report was like, well, it doesn't mean they're going to deal him. Like, there's a lot of phone calls that I wish, you know, general managers would make to inquire about certain players. It doesn't mean that that's going to be reciprocated. Like, yeah, well, let me hear your offer. Let's see what you got. You know, give me your best offer. No, you're not making this deal like the Pittsburgh Steelers yesterday if, in fact, you're now looking to offload your best defensive player.
Yeah.
In an offseason that you just signed Aaron Rodgers.
Unless they think it's a foregone conclusion or something and they just don't want to deal with it. Maybe. I don't know. I'm so far beyond like thinking I know what's going to happen or not happen with trades anymore because the NFL has just been – they've operated like a different league. Like, I guess it makes sense that the Steelers are operating differently than they used to because the number of kind of jaw-dropping trades that previously wouldn't have happened – it's more and more common now.
Yeah, I was listening to Maggie and Perloff, who's on before us this morning. They were asking the question, is this a Super Bowl or bust year for the Pittsburgh Steelers? And I was like, that's kind of a curious question. I don't know how to really digest that, but I thought, like, it's damn sure like a win a playoff game or bust season, it feels like, for Mike Tomlin, because this is a guy who hadn't won a playoff game, I don't think, since 2016.
Yeah, this is a show me some kind of life or progress, like Super Bowl or bust. No, there's nobody.
They're smoking that Aaron Rodgers peace pipe again, man. I don't know what else would cause you to ask that question.
The odds on the Steelers winning the Super Bowl right now are somewhere down right around the middle of the pack or so. And it's not like the moves that they made are, like, signing Aaron Rodgers isn't a Super Bowl or bust type of move. That's a grasping at straws. Yeah, hopefully we get some version of him that we haven't seen since several years ago when he was still in his 30s. And maybe it works out, but it's not. This is Tom Brady continuing to kill the rest of the league. Like, just Tom Brady was looking like he was on the downside of his career in New England, his last year in New England, because they didn't have any weaponry around him whatsoever. And somehow, because he went and did what he did in Tampa Bay with Mike Evans and Chris Godwin, by the way, alongside him, this is not the same as signing Tom Brady. This is a completely different scenario.
Yeah, it's just listening to the argument. Like, well, you don't sign Aaron Rodgers in an offseason if you're not trying to win a Super Bowl. You don't make the trade you did yesterday if you're not trying to win a Super Bowl. My only thought was, is like, you're not tiptoeing around the idea that hemming and hawing over paying your best defensive player in an offseason that you're trying to win a Super Bowl. You either put up or you shut up. And never mind, you know, Mike Tomlin, I don't know what to believe anymore, like, in terms of, like, control. If this is like, hey, you know, you've complained about not having a quarterback here or not having this there. Here's an offseason where we got you the quarterback. You know, we're going to swing this deal, make your defense better. And, oh, by the way, we're going to, you know, play patty cake with the idea that we're going to commit long term to T.J. Watt or not.
No, they're stuck in that. It's wild. They're stuck in that purgatory of the mediocre team, like the above average team, the fringe playoff team, where they you don't have that much salary cap flexibility. It doesn't feel like it's time for a hard reset. And yet, like, there's only so much you can do until you find your quarterback.
Yeah.
And they're just, that's where they've gotten into the mode of kind of where the Colts have been as of late, where they've had some good rosters, but it really means nothing if you can't find the quarterback for it.
Well,
I think they've done a great job in previous, like, in the last decade at various times of putting together some really good Colts rosters, except for the small detail of who's playing quarterback.
There's one thing in the back of my mind that gives me pause about wondering if T.J. Watt is long for Pittsburgh or not, and that's because he had an opportunity to watch J.J. Watt here with the Texans in kind of a similar situation as it is now, where Pittsburgh, look, they're going to the postseason. I think they've gone to the postseason 5 out of the last 8 years, but they don't win playoff games. And okay, finding a quarterback, do you think you got that guy? Maybe you don't have that guy. What was the story for, in large part, J.J. Watt's time as a Houston Texan? It was like, you had a pretty good roster around him, but it wasn't good enough. You win divisions, but, you know, you were bounced out in the first round. Like, you couldn't get over that hump. Maybe T.J.'s thinking, like, boy, am I stuck in, like, mediocrity, kind of like my brother was, you know, all those years in Houston?
Yeah, I think the difference is, in terms of winning the battle of public opinion, JJ was also when he ended up leaving, it was, well, Jack Easterby was still in control of a lot of things. It was just a completely dysfunctional and decrepit organization. So that was when everybody was in the mode of, like, yeah, anybody would want to get out of whatever the hell's going on here. Where the TJ, I don't think the sentiment is that overwhelmingly anti-Steelers the way it was anti-Texans when JJ, you know, either agreed to or forced his way out.
Yeah, well, yeah, times were very tenuous at that point in time with the Texans.
I would say, man, if I were TJ, it's easy to say what I would do if I were another person. There is something about being a Steeler for life that's different than a lot of other franchises. And for him, it just feels like, yes, the contract might be an issue, but it's definitely fueled probably by that. All right, he would never say it publicly, but maybe he doesn't believe in either the management, or he doesn't believe that Mike Tomlin's a guy to get him over the hump. That's got to factor into it at least a little bit.
What other organizations would you say something similar about, like Green Bay as you said, in Pittsburgh, being a Steeler for life, would you have that same feeling?
Packer? The Green Bay, yeah, definitely. Except the Green Bay is not as much a fun a city to visit as Pittsburgh is. The Raiders for sure.
Yeah,
it's different, but it's not the same as like a 49ers. I'm thinking about some of the all-time great franchises.
Yeah, it'd be a historic franchise.
Super Bowl wins and everything. Mm-hmm. There's something about the mystique about it. Cowboys, obviously. The Cowboys are just different in a lot of regards, but
yeah,
it's hard to be a lifelong Cowboy without being wrapped up in at least three scandals, though.
There's that, but maybe once upon a time it used to be that way, unless Jerry's driving you crazy and you want to get the hell out of Dodge.
Did you see the trailer for the Cowboys documentary they're doing on Netflix?
Oh, no. I forgot about that, actually.
It doesn't. It looks like it's going to be all about the glory days, at least from the trailer. And it definitely looks like it's endorsed by Jerry Jones. So I don't expect there to be much juiciness. I don't think there's going to be anything in it that we've... Because Jerry Jones is in it a bunch. And with these Netflix documentaries, once the head honchos are involved in the documentary, you're not going to get any of the dirt. Like when they did the University of Florida one, as soon as I saw Urban Meyer on the trailer, I was like, oh, okay. There's not going to be any of the really juicy stuff. They're gonna kind of gloss over.
Yeah, that's fair. I did enjoy that one though. That was kind of cool. All right, final segment coming up next. We'll talk to the guys from In the Loop, Reggie Atatula and Chris Partee. Again, in with Reggie, in for John Lopez today. We'll have that conversation with those guys. And baseball and their unwritten rules, Seth. Even the Astros didn't know about this one. I'll have it for you next. All right. Sean Bajani in for Sean Pendergast. Seth Payne here. I'll be back in tomorrow and then call it a quits for the rest of the week. I don't know. I don't know when I'll see anybody again. We'll have to figure it out. Actually, I do. I just committed to the Radiothon. That Ron Hughley and Reggie Atatula are having Thursday, 6 to 6 on Sports Radio 610. Excellent idea benefiting the Houston Food Bank, so that'll be a lot of fun. We'll be doing that. Are you going to make an appearance at any point in time on Thursday?
Yeah, I think I'm going to be on from 6 a.m. to 8 a.m. with them. I'm not sure exactly what. I was just I didn't know that I had Wednesday off until Reginald asked me to be on that. Which is the perfect time to ask somebody to do something in their free time. It's when that person doesn't even realize that it's free time to begin with.
That just happened to me 5 minutes ago. I didn't realize I had Thursday off
It's like, hey, by the way, do you want to come? You've got a vacation day you didn't know about, but don't get too excited. I've got a request for you. So I wake up early regardless. So I think I'm on at 6 a.m. with them sometime in my normal time.
Yeah,
slot.
There you go. It'll be fun, man. Looking forward to that. So I told you I was at the game on Sunday, the Astros game on Sunday. And I was there. I saw Jose Altuve's home run. And, me and my boy are having a great time. I always like to go back and watch the highlights. And so I did. And I noticed something sounding a little peculiar during the call from Todd Callis, Jeff Blum on the Space City Home Network. Here's how that home run sounded.
Altuve sends the ball in the air to deep left field. Ian Happ near the wall looks up. It's gone! Jose Altuve hits it out to left field. It's 2-0 Astros as he points to the bullpen. He remembered.
Jose Altuve hitting his 13th home run. The 22nd home run off Jameson Taillon was a towering shot to left field.
I was trying to figure out, Seth, why Todd Callis referenced, he pointed to the bullpen. He remembered.
Yeah. I was in the same boat because I wasn't watching the entire game. And when he said that, I was like, I don't want to ask my wife about this. So she just can lord it over me that she knew something because she'd been watching the whole game. I was curious too exactly what he had forgotten. I had no idea what they were talking about.
I had no idea. And then I looked it up. And actually, Matt Young from Cron.com wrote an article about this yesterday. And apparently, it stems from Astro reliever Steven Okert saying, to the rest of the guys on the team that, hey, man, why don't we get any love? And
the bullpen.
The bullpen.
He's not talking about specifically the bullpen, right?
Yeah, he's talking about the bullpen. He's like, why don't we get any love? In minor league baseball and in other teams, like a guy hits a double or a guy hits a home run, you know, they always wave or point to acknowledge in some way the bullpen, because they can't be there to greet the guys whenever they come in to score or whatever and celebrate with them. And even funnier than that is, remember Hector Neris, who actually came back and was an Astro for a little bit last year? Apparently, Hector Neris is credited with bringing that tradition to the big leagues, period. And so my first question was as well, Hector Neris was here before last year. He was here for a couple of years with the Astros. Why didn't they ever do this? And I still don't have a legitimate answer for that. Matt Young couldn't find that out.
Yeah. But
Jose Altuve apparently is one of the guys that they love to get on and make fun of, Steven Okert in particular, because he always forgets to acknowledge the bullpen.
Yeah, I support him in forgetting to acknowledge the bullpen. This is the last thing Altuve needs to be worrying about. He needs to be worrying about not swinging. He needs to be worrying about if he's on the base paths anywhere, including for a home run. I don't put it past him making a base running error on a home run. So look, he's an old guy. And sometimes those old habits die hard. It's not so simple to just add it. As you're also trying to learn how to play left field, that you got to remember to acknowledge the bullpen on your way around the bases. I'm wholeheartedly object to this unwritten rule.
Unwritten rule is what Matt Young wrote it as yesterday in Cron.com.
I don't know. I guess, yeah, with unwritten rule, I always think of him in baseball as something that's more about respect for the other team or whatever it might be. There's certain things you do and don't do.
Yeah, never mind your own team.
Yeah. And Altuve is 100% excused from that.
Yeah, but apparently it's been a tradition from college to the minors and now to the big. So
this is okay. I'm cool with this because this is a good team-oriented, you know, new thing that they do, apparently, that all the kids are doing. It makes sense. It's good for team unity, everything. I cannot stand this new NFL custom of trading jerseys after a game. It comes from... It's whenever NFL players started having an unhealthy fascination with soccer, for one, because this is like something that happens in soccer or rugby or some of the European sports. But it's supposed to be a huge show of respect. Back in the day, it was you would trade jerseys if you just battled it out, or some guy, maybe you're one of the great players, but this younger player just gave you a hell of a time. So as a show of respect, you give him your jersey. It means something. Now it's like every damn... I gotta watch a bunch of guys I've never heard of or I don't even want on my football team trading jerseys, with going up and asking Pat Mahomes for his jersey or something after a game. No. At least let me pretend that you hate Pat Mahomes of trying to... Oh, let me get in front. I want to be first in line to ask him for his jersey. It's pathetic. It's pathetic and it's beneath you.
You know, I'm actually surprised you have this take as a former player. Because I felt exactly the same way for a really, really long time. And my passion for it has actually decreased for whatever reason. Maybe it's because everybody does it. You know, they get the handshake line in hockey, you know, the same thing in basketball. Everybody daps each other up. You know, in baseball, I feel like we see that like far less. Like after a game, you don't go dap up, you know, the other team. There's no like handshake line. No, they fraternize during the game and maybe a little bit after the game in the tunnels and stuff like that. You see that as media members. But yeah, in football, it's like pictures and autographs and stuff like that. I feel like I've been desensitized to it, but I'm with you there. I felt that way for so many years where it's like I hate the opposition. My team should hate them too. You don't need to talk to them and you don't need their jersey.
No, this is 100% a big generation gap between guys my age and when I get around and talk to guys I played with. It's pretty commonly like, what the hell's wrong with these kids? What the hell? Yeah, I don't against a guy that you're just playing against and he's in your division and what the hell? No, I think the one where I flipped the most on being a grumpy old man to not caring about it at all is with bat flips. Like I just there was a point where it became enough of the standard that now I actually appreciate the really good bat flips. I get it with parents and their kids in Little League, like why you don't necessarily want them, becoming experts at bat flips. It does. Oh. It does still feel more like, kind of like, I kind of like the pros being able to have certain celebrations, but Yeah, I used to have to fight against the grumpy old man when it came to bat flips. Now I just wholeheartedly endorse them.
Yeah, I'm
especially
with you.
The ultimate is Alex Bregman carrying his bat all the way to first base.
Well, I only co-sign that one as an Astro. The Red Sox, I don't need to see that. I don't need to see that anymore. Hey, by the way, if we can acknowledge Steven Okert for just one second, not just for making this a thing with the Houston Astros, but by way of who he decided to make it a thing with. Jose Altuve, the face of this organization, somebody that's going to have his name, number hung in the rafters at some point in time in the future. There is a part in this story from Matt Young that says when Altuve hit a home run in April against the Tigers, Okert, who had pitched the top half of the inning, personally escorted Altuve to the dugout steps to make sure that he pointed the bullpen's way. So, like, you're taking Jose Altuve and you're saying, hold on, guy. Like, this MLB veteran, future Hall of Famer, like, you're saying, no, get your ass back up to the top of the steps, and you point to the bullpen, damn it, because they deserve love.
It's not like Okert's a spring chicken, though. I mean, he's 34 years old. He's, you know, he's been around a long time.
But he's the new guy. He's the new guy.
I can appreciate that. I like this better than, maybe I can. At some point, it was a tradition for a long time where they would try to rip Altuve's jersey off after a walk-off. You can go back and watch historically them either successfully ripping his shirt off or trying to rip his shirt off after a walk-off. That became the entire basis for a conspiracy series. I was about to say I can't see this turning into something like that, but yeah, a pitcher pointing out towards the bullpen or something afterwards, is that'll turn into somebody crediting like a high-speed camera that had been trained on the pitch count.
Oh, yeah, somebody had the flashlight, you know, signaling like flashing it off and on for a fastball and off and on for a breaking ball, whatever it is. Like, hey, thanks for the tip. Appreciate you.
Dude, if there's one organization that could definitely be that could pull off intercepting the pitch comm signal, I think it would be the Astros. As you get your former NASA engineers in there and everything, just figure out a way to intercept the pitch comm signal.
Oh Lord!
A little earpiece, little earpiece.
Don't start that. John Boy might be listening. All we need for is him to just be off to the races on another conspiracy theory. That'd be tremendous. The fellas from In the Loop are in the his house. Chris Partee in for John Lopez once again, and Reggie Atatula. Fellas, what's happening?
What up, though?
What's happening?
By the way, I just told Seth, who says he's committed to you between 6 and 8 on
That's
Thursday
right.
morning.
Oh,
I told him, I was like, dude, this is going to be awesome. I did not know this was a thing until like now, 10, 15 minutes ago, whenever you came in.
Apologies. That's my bad.
Great idea between you, Ron Hughley. Shout out to Parker Hillis for helping put all this together, the radiothon.
Yeah, I believe it's being officially billed as the Ron and Reggie radiothon, but in my head, I feel like, you know, Reggie and Ron radiothon has a better
ring.
Like,
to
it has a better, I don't know if alliteration, but like rhyme scheme to it. Ron, Reggie and Ron radiothon.
It flows a little better.
Like, it flows a little bit better. But I also am trying to check my ego and make sure that that's not the reason why.
Maybe it's a little bit, but that's okay.
It is possible.
That's okay.
6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Thursday, July 3rd, myself and Ron, but also, as you mentioned, Seth, Clint, everybody is going to rally together because, you know, we're going to have some fun on air, but it's all for a good cause. We're trying to raise money for the Houston Food Bank, who has lost $11 million in funding. They've had that level of cuts this year.
Damn.
And I don't know if, I mean, you live in Houston. You know, we ain't lost no people yet in the 18 counties that the Houston Food Bank serves.
Lost.
So,
only growing.
Yeah,
lost.
Right. So the amount of people that need to be served with 11 million less, fewer dollars, it's staggering. So the little bit that we as a Sports Radio 610 community can help by running our, you know, running Love our it. Gums or flapping our gums, what have you, I think we should be able to do. So July 3rd, sit by your radios, hang out with us. We're going to try and have a lot of fun. But most importantly, we're going to try and raise some money for a good cause.
I'll be surprised if I haven't helped you raise that entire amount by 8 a.m.
Okay.
So you guys might be able to take the day off after that.
Yeah.
We'll just play, old clips from when Jim Rome was on the stage.
Oh, my God.
I'm taking this as a commitment because you said it over air, so it is actionable. So I'm expecting
it's
$11
on the record.
Million dollars of money raised by Seth Payne in particular.
Yeah. took JJ like multiple weeks to raise all that money for the hurricane. I can knock out 11 million in two hours easy.
No exactly. Problem. I expect nothing less, to be honest.
Crosstalk is sponsored by D&M Auto Leasing. Reggie Atatula and Chris Bartian for John Lopez. So yesterday you sprung the question of the day on me.
Yeah, my bad. That's on me.
No, it was good. I should have remembered. It was a fun one. Favorite sports quotes. I imagine y'all had some really good ones. Come up yesterday.
And we left so much on the cutting room floor. Like, we left so
There's
much
so
on the
many,
table.
Though.
There really are. Like, the ones that I love a lot, and I think you guys gained a lot of enjoyment out of, which is, are the baseball ones. Like, 80s baseball players are the most fascinating people to me.
Oh, yeah.
Probably because of the drug usage, but also because, like, they played a much better brand of baseball. And I think also, we didn't get to the kids so early. So, like, they weren't polished in dealing with the media by the time they got to the pros or what have you. So I gave you the Mookie Wilson quote, which is one of my favorites.
Oh, that was amazing.
Yes. I have that in my phone for all time.
I do as well.
So you both have it in your phone.
And I'm just trying to get to Christian Walker because I want to give him the Mookie Wilson quote because I think it will help him quite a bit, right? if I believe in dinosaurs, then somewhere out there they believe in me. And if they believe in me, then I can believe in me, and I bust out. And I'm that is it.
He was definitely high on something. He was on something.
Cocaine.
Had to be.
He was high.
Maybe all of the above.
Yeah, possibly.
Man, he had a cocktail going.
I cherish that quote from Mookie Wilson for many reasons, actually. Longer than I have to explain right now. That is like one of the greatest sports quotes of all time. In the Hall of Fame, for sure. Question of the day today.
So the question of the day today, I mean, hell, if you want to just keep sending in quotes, I won't be mad. But our question of the day is inspired by a little incident that I had yesterday. What is the most memorable weight that you've had? Because I had a little fender bender incident yesterday, and you'll be surprised that it happened on Westheimer. I mean, everything's fine. Drivable car, right? Like, insurance will deal with it. However, that also plays into this because nobody was hurt. There was no obstruction in the street. Mm. And so when we called HPD in order to try and get a police report, you might imagine that we were out there for a while.
That's a wait, man.
Yeah.
Yeah. I've been there before wearing jeans in the sun. Waiting.
Goodness.
That's a long wait. That's
and I had a different weather situation because it wasn't jeans in the sun. There was rain yesterday. We had a nice little flash storm
in there.
So yeah. That was a very memorable wait for me, and that got me thinking. There's got to be all sorts of times where you just had a wait that you were like, goodness gracious.
Yeah.
You know the dumbest wait that I remember, because this happens a lot, at least with me when I had a newborn, is that you'll spend time. You're worried about two things. One, you know that as a parent, your primary role is to keep them alive. That's a big one. Mm-hmm, they stress that at the hospital. But two is that for your own sanity, you want that kid to sleep as much and as peacefully as possible. So whenever it was my job to check on the baby, I would sit in there and you watch. And I've done this when I like checking on other people's babies before too. It takes a long time to figure out whether they're actually breathing or not. But the last thing you want to do is jostle the kid. They sleep so peacefully, ideally. And you're sitting there, you're waiting for movement. And the whole time you're thinking, like, I've been staring at this baby for 3 minutes. If there were genuinely an issue, I am really botching this right now. But I'm going to wait. I'm going to keep waiting. Oh, yeah. She breathed. So those were the longest waits for me, trying to see if I was doing my two primary roles as a father.
Seth, that sounds terrifying.
it really sucks.
It sucks.
Yeah, you don't know what you're doing. You know, Chris, I can't tell you what it's like when they send you home with the baby and you're just like, I know I'm not prepared for this. I'm actually, do you realize there's no experts in my house? I'll rent a room at the hospital for the next 6 months. What? Terrifying.
And you live on WebMD for like.
Oh my goodness.
Yeah.
The first couple of months.
Did they actually at least give you like car seat pointers? Because I know that that's something that they do now. Or was it just like, hey, make sure that this thing gets home straight?
I did. It was the hardest thing I've ever done as a man, where you never want to admit that you want help with anything. I did what they recommend you do, which is go to a fire station and they help you out and show you. And they seemed pleased to do it. They might have known that I was a Texans player, but they were very.
That helps.
Friendly. Yeah.
I'll take a note. When I have a kid, be a Texans player.
Yes.
Yeah. But then use your taxpayer dollars and have those nice firemen show you how to do it. And be sure it's insecurely.
See, as someone that doesn't have any kids, I never knew that was a thing that you could go to a fire station and get help with a car seat. I never knew something like that even existed.
Yeah, absolutely. Yeah. Seth with the helpful pointers, man. Appreciate you.
I was so worried about screwing something. You know how absent-minded I am. I'm like, I'm going to leave this kid on top of a car at some point. I had checklists around and everything.
I feel terrible laughing at that because that's terrifying.
Leave him on top of the car like he's a Slurpee or something and you're loading groceries. Right. You just put your drink on top of the car.
I cannot imagine the amount of like yelling in that parking lot that's hey, slow down. Hey, there's a kid on top of your car.
Not spoken from experience at all. Right?
Yeah, I check my back seat every time I get out now because I knew that was a big, yeah.
I think that's a good vestige to have. Like, rather than the alternative, that's a much better kind of a signal to have. Sean, is there one for you, a memorable wait?
Do we have time for it?
Yeah, man. Why not?
Radiothon starting early.
Yeah, here we go.
I'll just say real quickly, it came by way of a car accident similar to you.
Oh, my goodness, of course.
Mine happened on 45 South back in 2007. I was at a dead stop, and somebody came up and hit me. It had to be going at least 40, 50 miles
Yikes.
Per hour.
Oh.
So they hit me. I hit the person Yikes. In front of them. I get out of the car like a madman, check the person in front of me to make sure they're okay. Then I go to the guy that hit me, and I was just going to just destroy him.
Mm-hmm. Mm-hmm.
He took off down the freeway, hit the feeder, ran behind a car shop. I was just on the overpass. And
on
so
foot?
Well, he jumped out of his car?
Jumped out of his car and ran. It was a hit and run, literally.
He was also on Greenies. So like you can't convince me otherwise.
I am stuck in the middle lane, and I am watching this guy hide behind this auto repair shop for what felt like an eternity. Long story short, cop that had come by to offer service had actually just dropped his partner off at a house that got a call about a stolen car.
Oh. Wow.
I noticed a car come by. That guy popped out of the back of the auto repair shop. He got in the car, took off down Park Place. Lo and behold, I'm being brought home by a cop because I don't have a car.
Yeah.
And so we pull in the driveway. He gets word from his partner that, hey, somebody just pulled up here. The guy that stole the car that hit me had gone back to the place that he had stole the car from.
Oh, what a terrible villain.
Idiot, right?
Useless criminal.
It was just it's a wild and crazy story. Even crazier, like the lady that I hit was actually at a funeral the week following. My grandfather had died, and she was at my grandfather's funeral. Her dad and my grandfather had actually been hunting together for like 20 years.
My word.
It's just a wild and crazy
this story.
This story
goes deep.
It goes really, really deep.
It goes very deep.
It goes really, really deep.
You didn't know that at the time of the accident?
No.
You walked into that funeral and saw the lady from a week
ago. Oh, hey, how you doing?
She greeted me at the funeral like to offer condolences, and I was like, I hit you last week.
Yeah. I rear-ended you.
It's like, oh, yeah, you know, my dad and your grandfather used to hunt for like 20 years together, so it's pretty wild.
That's amazing.
Yeah. Fun times.
Well, not amazing, but
yeah, story. I was like, I don't know what the word is.
The story part.
Did the guy, hey, Sean, was the guy that you were watching, the perp, was the perp aware that you could see him? Like, was he eyeballing you?
No. No, mind you, I'm on top of an overpass on 45, and this auto repair shop was on, like, Park Place or Broadway, whatever it was. He was hiding behind the building. I had him cornered. I could see him
He's within plain sight of the actual accident, hiding. Like, just in playing it. What an idiot. My God.
Yeah, it was wild. Well, the worst part is he went back to the house that he stole the car from, which happened to be his buddy's grandmother's house.
Yeah.
So, fun times. All right, story time with Reggie.
That was fun.
That's a good story.
More of that on Thursday. Thursday. The Reggie and Ron Radiothon.
Yeah, more wild and wacky stories.
Yeah.